late great, eh?
Amen.
Gosh.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil. I should have had you on my show when you were alive. Hell, now you're dead and you're on the show. Tasteful as usual. What are we hearing now? What's next on our list?
First, should we back announce?
We should back announce. Go for it.
That was Duke of Windsor, composed by Philharmonic. That was from a realization from the 16th of December in 1971 with a very young-sounding Philharmonic's voice.
Wonderful piece.
Yeah, I've actually not heard that before. Mark has found hundreds of hours of tapes of Phil's work dating from when, Mark, 1971, or there's some in the late 60s?
Yeah, the end of the 60s.
So Mark's not by a microphone, so I'm going to translate what he's saying. From the late 1960s up until, actually some things, I guess, what, 1990?
Yeah,
he has over 20 years of tapes, hundreds of hours of tapes, and has been going through these and just finding not necessarily coherent bits and pieces, but bits and pieces. The coherence wasn't really a factor.
He never really was that interested in documenting things or leaving organized records, so it's kind of been a matter of piecing things together.
And that was a nice piece. Next, we're going to hear Gertrude Stein in America. This is
actually an excerpt from a KPFA interview with Phil from 1976.
74. For all of you
interview,
notes.
The interview was in 76, but fine. The performance was in 74.
Yeah,
fine, how do I know?
So Phil talks a little bit at the beginning, and then he plays the reading, the Gertrude Stein reading.
Why is your top off?
It's hot in here.
But now I have some serious music to play.
Oh, you brought some serious music in today, Phil?
Well, what I have to play is a kind of sample tape that I brought along. This first excerpt, for instance, is a piece that I did called Gertrude Stein in North America. No, I kind of stopped doing concert pieces.
Uh-huh.
After a while, but decided that it was nice to sit down with a good book and go on with it for 6 or 8 hours at a time when people could get relaxed about the musical experience.
While you read the book?
Mm-hmm. I decided to choose Gertrude Stein's book called A Long Gay Book and read it out loud. And first did it in New Hampshire at an event called New Music in New Hampshire. And subsequently I did it at Mills College. So maybe you should play this sample. It fades in and fades out and fades in again and fades out again. And those are two excerpts of what the work is like.
Okay. So I want to ask you some things about yourself, but we can start off by playing the music directly.
Great. Maybe after we can play that and... Okay, fine.
Okay. Yikes.
What an innovator. Now every New Year's Eve in New York City, they read, you know, they either read Finnegan's Wake or they read Gertrude Stein at what gallery? Paula Cooper or something like that.
Yeah,
weren't we there once on New Year's?
Yeah, right.
Just make it up. That's right.
Yeah, we just come in from Paris on the Concorde, yeah. Wow, okay, so that was from 1976.
Tell them about the squirrel.
Phil owned and used and hundreds of stuffed animals. He had them all around his pad, all around his apartment, and they'd be arranged in various shocking forms or just in surprise places. You never knew where the animals were going to pop up. And one of his favorite animals was squirrel, and squirrel is actually here with us tonight. Other favorites were lobby. There were various opi.
Yeah, the real the apex though was without doubt Fluffy.
Who was Fluffy?
Fluffy Fluffy is one of those beings who's hard to describe. Squirrel is sort of Fluffy gone bad.
Fluffy gone bad. There was also Angry Bunny.
Yeah, Mad Bunny.
Mad Bunny, yeah, that has a very, very dour, angry look.
But what happened tonight was, to get over to myself, of course. No, what happened tonight was Mark has this briefcase with all the tapes in it, and they said, I was just walking by, and they said, look in there, Barbara, and I just screamed because Squirrel was in there, and I'm really afraid of squirrels because I just think they're rats with cute little tails and sharp teeth and rabies.
And Squirrel is now perched on one of the studio monitors, glowering.
And they're, the boys are both saying basically that Phil is definitely lurking in that squirrel.
Yeah, Squirrel is expressing Phil's presence and making and guaranteeing that we're properly aligned this evening.
Would Phil? Never mind.
Okay, so, next.
Let's move along.
Beethoven's birthday.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the entire period was for this, but I think for many years running, Phil staged Beethoven's birthday events.
And as Nam June Paik said,
Phil made Beethoven famous.
Exactly. Phil Hammond made Beethoven famous.
That's beautiful.
This is from it says on my crib sheet here, a 1978 performance, but who knows?
Yeah. So,
December 16th, 1978.
Yeah, and one thing to remember about these Beethoven's birthday performances is they generally have more silence than sound in them. So there are a couple of silent spots.
So don't call us up for that.
Yeah, if you want to bring... Well, never mind.
Yeah, what do we need? Bloody Marys?
Bloody Marys.
Yeah, if you want to bring us Bloody Marys or anchovy pizza, we'll take it.
Yeah, what's the number here? Is it still 848?
4425.
Okay, and this is Beethoven's birthday by Philharmonic. The 16th of December, 1978. Scratch and a lot of other things that we are part of our aural landscape now. Philharmonic with Beethoven's birthday. That dates from the 16th of December, 1978, and according to my notes, that was performed at the Ear Inn in New York City.
Oh, yeah. Tell a story about what happened at Limbo recently. 2 years ago, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's been about 2 years.
Two years.
In 91, yeah.
Limbo has a restaurant in south of Market in San Francisco has a performance program of sorts. Performers, artists show up with their tapes and or videos and perform, and Philharmonic was still the only composer I know of that truly outraged people with his music. He was playing some CD loop pieces, and we'll hear some examples of those later, but he would put CDs, he would loop them so that they played maybe short segments over and over and over, and he would do that with several CD players. And I believe that evening he was playing loops of Strauss waltzes, and the cooks and wait persons they would yell when he would start playing it, "Mom, he's doing it again, make him stop." And I showed up for the performance, and I think I was drinking some ale or something, a few ales, and started muttering something about, take that off so they can hear Black Flag. I don't dislike Black Flag, but...
Uh-huh.
And they were picking up on that and muttering back about Black Flag and trying to find Black Flag to play and having Phil stop his performance. And to this day, that wall is filled with the photographs of artists who have performed at Limbo, but Philharmonic's not on the wall. I think it's time to get a photo of Phil on the wall at Limbo.
Well, I was on the wall, but I was with an artist who is married, and a beautiful picture of us, and he was dining at Limbo with his wife, and his wife said, get that picture off the wall. So the picture's off the wall now, and that's why I'm not on the wall.
Go figure. Yeah, no, neither Barb Golden nor Philharmonic are on the wall at Limbo.
But I just want to share one thing. You thought I should share this, right, Mark? About my underpants. And that is that a few years ago, Charles Amarkanian, our erstwhile music director, recently departed, had a garage sale. And they were actually selling underwear as well. God. And this looked like, well, it looked like...
This is cleaned underwear? It's been washed or what?
It didn't even look used. I think it was fancy underwear. You know, Calvin Klein and really fancy stuff. And I bought out all the underwear.
So you're...
I think both their underwear. I mean...
You're wearing Charles Amarkanian's underwear right now?
Here, look. See?
Yeah, it's... Yeah,
that's true.
That's probably Charles Amarkanian's underwear. Okay, next.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. We're going to cut to the Fenton's readings. These were readings which took place at Fenton's Ice Cream Parlor. I suppose that was still on Piedmont Avenue in Oakland at the time.
Still is right
and
now.
Still
I was
is.
There yesterday.
And how are things at Fenton's?
I wasn't there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I was
now
at Barty's, but I was walking along by Fenton's, and I should have gone to Fenton's.
Close enough. Well, on April 22nd, 1974, Philharmonic was at Fenton's doing a performance, and it's simply titled Fenton's Reading.
Okay, this is a... these are... documentary recordings of a number of evenings that I spent at an ice cream parlor called Fenton's in Oakland, which is a pretty weird kind of hangout for kind of fraternity people and religious school crowds and all of that. But I decided one day to start writing down what was going on, and eventually one thing led to another, and I accumulated a whole lot of documentation. Thursday night, September 6, 1973, 11:20 p.m., not many people in the place. The dish boy is wearing a red carnation. The waitress, whom I'd seen before wearing fantastic ice tong, ice cube earrings, asked how I was tonight and collected the change off an adjacent table. A boy wearing a white t-shirt is seated near the door with another boy and a girl. He must be thirsty. He drained one glass of water and began on another. Every time I come to Fenton's for coffee, I check the cream container. One night, when I came here with Clay Fear for coffee and ice cream, somebody had put pepper into the cream container.
Listening to Fenton's readings, and for about the fifth time tonight, I was dead wrong. That was not a reading performed at Fenton's Ice Cream Parlor on Piedmont in Oakland, but readings about Phil's experiences at Fenton's Ice Cream on Piedmont in Oakland. And Mr. Harmonic, there wasn't even stream of consciousness. He had taken the stream of consciousness and crystallized it to exactly what was happening before him and inside of him in very eloquent fashion. And that was from 1974, and the openly gay concerns expressed in that, basically out cruising at the ice cream parlor, was pretty impressive too. Fenton's readings. After that, or crossfading into it, was Edible Complex. I guess you could call that a composition by Barbara Golden.
No, I wouldn't even call it a composition. That was the days when...
That was before composition.
Well, I was just taking a tape recorder with me everywhere. Really, it was a little boombox, wasn't it? And very, very bad quality, and just taping everything.
But and, I knew whose voices were in there. I heard your voice, I heard Philharmonic's voice, and Sam Ashley's inimitable
laugh.
Voice and laugh.
Yeah.
Do you remember where that was recorded?
That was at Edible Complex.
Fine.
As okay. You've just said. What do you
fine,
mean,
I forgot about Edible
recorded?
Complex. Is that still open?
God,
I don't get
memory.
Out anymore.
Now it's called, would you get this? And now it's called Complex. The Complex. No, it's called the Edible. No, not the Complex. I thought it should be called the complex, but it's called the edible now.
And that's on College.
Yeah.
In
Oakland. Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
Happy that you're so interested, Kenneth.
Fenton's readings from the 22nd of April, 1974. That's when the readings took place. My Philharmonic, and then Edible Complex, a pre-composition recorded by Barbara Golden at the then Edible Complex in Oakland. And are we going to hear radio music next?
Sure.
And that's from 1972.
Probably from 1972. There were a lot of realizations of radio music, and I think part of what Phil intended was to create some time capsules, which they've really become since then. Part of this tape that we're not going to hear has some references to Richard Nixon's re-election, which is about to happen just after this tape is made. So whatever year that happened in is when this happened.
This is about 1972, and should we just listen to the whole thing, the whole segment? Okay. Philharmonic, radio music, about 1972.
She's by you.
1972, composed by Philharmonic. The juxtaposition of different radio stations always somehow strike me as prescient music. I mean, it evokes things. I mean, that was from 1972. He evokes some things that seem very, pardon me, but relevant to today. Who knows what the method to that madness was? I guess it was just Phil's aesthetic. That's what's cutting through everything tonight, and mm-hmm. something that's as long as I knew Philharmonic, and I knew him from 1980 to last year when he died. I knew his personal aesthetic was the same from day to day, but this is the first time I've heard a lot of these pieces, and I'm really struck by a certain, as varied and diverse as the different works are, it's amazing how strong his aesthetic was and how it cuts through and informs every single piece we've heard tonight. Very masterful, masterful mixing of radio music.
Just want to remind you that you're listening to listener-sponsored KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. And also, this is marathon time. What other station other than this would you be able to hear music like this? So send in your pledge, phone tomorrow, send money. You can send as little as $20-$40 for the whole year, get the folio, etc.
Is this considered a plug?
No. What kind of a plug? Don't get me started.
Okay.
There's also a Sun Ra benefit, Saturday, February 20th and Sunday, February 21st, 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Coffrey Community Center, which is 811 Washington Street in Oakland, between 8th and 9th, a two-day marathon jam session and benefit and celebration of Sun Ra. And playing will be, among many others, Ed Kelly, E.W. Wainwright, Kamausi Tu, and Fabio Cuccicciaguglia, Butch Haynes as well. So, and KPFA, how do you pronounce this? I should know because it's my station.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I'll cover while we're trying to figure this out. Exactly,
anyway,
you pronounced that perfectly.
K Jazz Barb, Parlacha, and Greg Bridges. So, they're starting at 3 p.m. until 9 p.m. Tickets are $15. It's well worth it. So, and for more information, call 832-5669. That's 510.
I'd like to mention that we're just an hour into this show. This is a three-hour show, and there are rewards awaiting the listeners. I'm not going to promise. It just depends on how the evening goes. But you might, if everyone's good, you might get to hear some eye clicks from Squirrel.
And they demonstrated it, and it's like, it's It's mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling. It's out there. It's... You would not hear this on any other radio station, but iClicks from Squirrel on KPFA Berkeley. Next, we're going to hear an interview with Philharmonic. And this was originally broadcast over KPFA on the 11th of November of 1976. The show that we're going to play the excerpt from was hosted by...
Howard Moskowitz.
And all I know now is that Howard has moved. That's all that Barbara Golden would tell us. But Barbara, you know Howard, right?
Yeah, he used to live right up the hill from Mills College. And he was a real early... Wasn't he a real early computer person, right? And
we're guessing. This is...
And composer. I think he collaborated with Jim Horton in some electronic works.
If Jim happens to be listening, perhaps he could
fill
us in.
Jim can edify us. And if anyone else knows or anyone else wants to say hello, you won't be on air, but do give us a call at 848-4425.
Wait, maybe that's the
848-4425. And... oh, yeah, Howard Moskowitz was the first person who helped me out photographing some of my paintings. And then I used to read poems and use the slides of the paintings as big backdrops.
So Howard has definitely been a friend of the avant-garde. And if you are an FOP, a friend of Phil, give us a call, 848-4425.
Obviously have original concepts of music. How do you explain this? If someone said, I'm used to hearing a composer write for orchestras or choruses or electronic instruments or tapes or something, how do you figure this fits in there? What are you trying to do when you're writing this kind of stuff?
Well, in this instance... Okay, in the traditional instance, a composer hears music in his head and writes black dots on paper to tell other people how to play these sounds he hears in his head. In this case, I began making... I figured that radio music was a way of making the radio frequencies that saturate us during our lives available by modulating the proper frequencies and making these constant saturating sounds that are always available, audible at any particular place that would depend instead of making audible sounds that I hear in my imagination, I'm making audible sounds that are in the air, and in both cases, the live performance and the studio recording, I've constantly kept my ears open to listen and to make serious compositional judgments about how the music changes and when. Of course, if I'm mixing six channels together at once, I'll mix in a certain channel possibly without knowing what's on it.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, I it's intuitive. It's a matter of intuition rather than just what my ear hears. However, I prefer making a special mix for each particular purpose that this music is going to be put towards. So this the version that we're listening to now is a version for an open reel tape that lasts a half an hour. However, I made a version for some people who are traveling away back east once from an 8-track recording mixed down to 8 channels in line mixed down to a mono cassette. And in that case, I added a little bit of reverb.
Uh-huh.
So these are all monaural program sound sources. It's all monaural program material, enhanced, turned into stereo and enhanced. I like that concept of enhancement, and if that's not musical composition, I don't know what is.
Okay.
So this is, but these are still compositions. And further along, there are the more social kinds of things. The Art While You Wait opening, the Rolling Tones co-op. Art While You Wait took place in, at least up to this point, in two different sections as a storefront environment. Once in Berkeley at 1937 Ashby Avenue, there's now a tattoo parlor there, I think, which is quite wonderful. And that was Ashby near Grove. That was the first Art While You Wait. And the second Art While You Wait was Art While You Wait at 511 Potrero Avenue in San Francisco. I lived at the second Art While You Wait and also helped make it a storefront environment. And however, I didn't live at the first Art While You Wait, which was just a store that was available for anybody.
What is Art While You Wait? It sounds like cleaning or something.
Art While You Wait...
Or what was it?
Art While You Wait just defines the store itself and the people who interact with it. It was a way of expressing my idea that people are more important than art objects. Because you can have any kind of art gallery. I mean, if you have money, you can rent a gallery and put fancy art up there and enhance the illusion that those fancy art objects are more meaningful and more important than the people, and either the people who did these things or the people who are available to interact with each other. So Art While You Wait could have been just another store, but instead it was an empty space activated as a sculpture in time.
And did you sell anything there?
No, nothing was for sale. Sometimes I had pages of art reproductions that I gave out. I mean, reproductions of my own work. And sometimes I was just there. I mean, whoever was minding the store was there waiting, and other people could come and wait. And I particularly liked the idea of waiting as a means of making art.
So it was Art While You Wait.
That's right.
While the customer, there were no customers. That was the store, though.
Art While You Wait.
I see.
You, but like you, not Y-O-U.
You give away your art stuff, then.
Yes.
Without asking any contribution or anything.
That's right. There are contributions, hopefully, from the participating artists, but as such, being...
You mean the contributions will be art. You don't ask for money, then. From other artists.
Well, I did have to ask for some artists to chip in on the rental of this place because our landlord wasn't so charming that he let us have the store completely for free. As a matter of fact, there was quite a stink towards the end of the history of Art While You Wait, in which the landlord came in and was quite vocal and quite obnoxious. So maybe we should play some of this tape. Play this one. And then I can talk about the Rolling Tones. And
well, what are we going to hear now?
This is sounds in the environment from the opening of the Art While You Wait storefront in Berkeley, 1974. There's some hum on the line. That's not us. It's not you. It's on the tape.
The Honeymoon Hotel Grand Opening.
Remember the Grand Opening for
Art While You Wait, a discussion and tape from a KPFA broadcast, Philharmonic interviewed and talking with Howard Moskowitz on August 4th, 1974. Who better to describe the music but the composer? Nice hearing Phil's voice on all these tapes. Helen Chance, another of Phil's friends, have expressed to me since his death how they miss hearing his voice, and I'm enjoying getting to hear his voice again, and it's fun walking around the building and hear Phil echoing off all the surfaces. Next are some excerpts from a KPFA interview from the 11th of November, 1976. And as we mentioned earlier, if you were tuned in earlier, Phil had a way of sort of evoking hostile elements in the environment, just as his music, actually beautiful music of Strauss waltzes looped together. Even that beautiful music evoked hostile reactions from some of the listeners. Phil seemed to be able to bring hostile callers out of the woodwork when he was on the radio. And this is a little excerpt, an example.
We have someone on the phone here. I think that they're, we can get them on just a second here. Push the right buttons. And hello, are you there?
Can you?
Yes.
Uh huh.
Howard, can you roll that other tape?
Yeah, just a minute.
Sure. Hello. Are
hello.
You? Hi.
I want to know what's going on.
Well, I'm just playing some samples of some music I've been composing and performing here in the Bay Area for like the past 5 or 6 years.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but it's virtually impossible over the radio to tell what the hell it is that's going on.
I think it might have been hard even at the Co-op Natural Foods store, too.
They're environmental recordings. What kind of radio do you have?
Excuse me?
What kind of radio are you listening to it on?
I'm listening to it on a...
Oh, my God. The other guy smiles.
What do you call it? Transistor.
Sort
of a nice one though, that you plug in, you know, like a Sony one.
That's interesting.
What has that got to do with it? I mean, I can hear the radio fine any other show I'm listening to, but I don't understand what this is that's going on.
Yeah, I think that part of the art experience that I'm interested in has very much to do with the very personal things that are happening in everybody's life. In other words, it's real interesting for me what kind of radio you're listening to the program on, just as a matter of physical identity of the medium along
which we're
communicating.
What good does it do me if I can't hear anything on it? I mean, that's the point of it.
Right. It's the.
I mean, it may tell you something about me that I have a Sony transistor, but it's not telling me anything. And what it's supposed to do is tell me something, you know.
Well, what can I tell you? Actually, these tapes, the recordings that we're playing, are most good listened to in stereo because they give you a bare suggestion of what the spaces were like that the recordings were made in, except for of course that studio recording, which was meant for stereo playback. I guess most of my music is meant for 2 ears listening to stereo. Or else in a real space with other people.
Well, I think that you probably should have taken that into consideration before you put this on the air. Not a lot of people have stereo, two speakers, and nice amplifier systems and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. I don't mean to discriminate against people, and I don't mean to say
you're any less
special. No, I'm not saying that. Well, okay. I mean,
the way people are reacting,
that's nice.
We are about 15 years later, and we are loving this stuff. Philharmonic. Being very present with a hostile caller on KPFA.
So we'll put a caller on?
In 1976.
Let's play,
as always, Phil was just right there being Phil and letting other people be themselves also.
Yeah, I did a Christmas show. Remember that wonderful Christmas? Like, even Rudolph won't like this, or even Rudolph will like this, something like that. And I commissioned everybody to do pieces for me, and it was Christmas morning, and usually Bach is played. So...